the Vietnam War. It's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hey, hey, waka waka.
That's like a Sesame Street reference, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Fozzie Bear.
Fozzie Bear, okay.
Yeah.
How many Sesame Street characters can you do?
That's about the only one. Well, I mean, any voice that sounds like Fozzie's is about as close as I can get. Yeah.
Okay, well.
You know, but I think that covers like 4, 5, 7 characters.
Yeah, it's like, used to all be one dude doing a whole bunch, right?
Yeah.
It used to be Jim Henson with his hand up those puppets, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's probably two dudes doing the whole thing. And one of them sounds like you.
That could be it.
No? All right. Hey, you know what? I'm really excited. You always are.
I like that about you.
Yeah, I get excited easy. I'm always excited. I'm always ready. That's what they say.
There you go.
No, I got on the FedEx truck. I got my Blickman top tier system.
Ah, yeah.
I tell you, these shows are finally paying off, baby.
Much assembly required, but it's worth it.
I got me a top tier. Yeah, I haven't even opened the boxes. I've been really busy with technical edits on the yeast book. So I carried it into the garage. I confirmed that the boxes were not damaged, and then there they sit. So hopefully,
it's kind of interesting how the packaging, the shipping on those things is pretty remarkable. I mean, to be able to fit that whole brew stand into just a couple boxes is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, mine came in 9 boxes. So
okay.
I'm like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. He probably threw a whole bunch of extra stuff in there.
Could be.
John Blickman seems pretty generous guy, and I think that's one of the reasons that he's sponsoring the show. I think it's not just good business, but it's also he wants to help further home brewing, and I think he thinks that what we do is worthwhile. So he's sponsoring the show. He's paying for the shows, so the listeners don't have to. And I think that's great stuff. If you appreciate that, if you appreciate the show, make sure you go to www.blickman.com. And Blickman is BlickmanN.com. And, check out their stuff and, send them a nice email. Tell them you appreciate it. Because I know he likes to get those emails. He's like, hey, it's really, touching that people would take the time to let them know that they appreciate it. So, do that. Go down to your homebrew shop and ask to see some of the Blickman stuff. We're going to be talking about the Blickman beer gun coming up because we're doing these packaging shows. And we'll have John Blickman on and ask him about that as well.
Let me correct the website real quick. It's BlickmanEngineering.com. You got to get the engineering in there.
Blickman.
Otherwise, you get a
porn Blickman site.
Human Resources Management and Development, German company.
Oh, there you go. Well, my mistake. Don't tell them you appreciate them, but BlickmanEngineering.com. It's been a long morning already.
Yeah. Well, you had to get up at crack of dawn, drive over to Concord.
Yeah, yeah. Crack of God knows when. Over to Pacheco, to the mean streets of Pacheco, and fight my way in here, you know. But I'm used to tough road trips like that. Speaking of tough road trips, Peter Simons and I, we're getting in the Popemobile, and we're driving 2,500 miles out to the NHC in June in Minneapolis, and we're going to be hitting like two breweries a day for 7-8 days until we get there, and then a couple of days around in Minneapolis before the conference. So I posted all the details in the Brewing Network forums. If you go to thebrewingnetwork.com and check the forums there in the events section, I've posted it to Peter and Jamil's road trip. And, you know, a lot of people might be interested in something like this. Like, you'd be interested, but you got to work, you know, so it eliminates a lot of people. But, you know, when Peter said, yeah, I'd be interested in going, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm on board. I said, my first question to him was, now you've seen the RV, right? You know, because this is not like, you know, some state-of-the-art, fancy, you know, $300,000, $400,000 RV. This is a 14-year-old, you know, 1996.
She's a beaut, though.
Diesel, yeah. Diesel chugger.
It's true. She isn't one of those modern ones that you see like the bands driving around in. But I do like that RV. You got a good little truck there.
Yeah, Justin spent a week living in that thing in when we went to the Denver conference.
It's real cool. It's I like that style.
Yeah, you got the tap handles up by the driver's seat.
Have those been installed since I was last there?
Oh, of course. You know, it's all rigged out for a fine road trip, but. Yeah, going with Peter, and then we'll hit a bunch of spots. So yeah, we've got homebrew club meetings, we've got brewery events, we got all sorts of stuff kind of coming together, and a lot of chances to meet up. And you know, even if we're just stopping for lunch at a brew pub or something, come on by and you know, say hi and hang out with us. It's a lot of fun. That's the whole reason for the trip. It's, I mean, you can try lots of different beers, which is great. We'll enjoy that, but.
That'd really be pretty cool dropping in on some homebrew meetings.
Yeah, the really cool thing is just meeting up with you know, other homebrewers and saying hey and just chatting. You know, that's one of the great things about this hobby is you know, meeting all sorts of like-minded people and having a blast.
I was just down in San Antonio last weekend for their Alamo City Cerveza Fest.
Yeah.
That was a blast.
I really wanted to go, and. You know, we said we'd both go last year when you couldn't make it because of the fires, and then I'm assuming they were going to schedule it around the same time of year, and then like, oh, we got to change it to you know, April. I'm like, well, just don't make it the weekend of my daughter's birthday. And so they made it the weekend of my daughter's birthday. I can't miss my daughter's birthday, so unfortunately, I couldn't go. But
it would have been cool to have you there because. We had a great time. We had the Beer Olympics at the Freetail Brewery on Friday night, and which consisted of beer can bocce ball.
Yeah,
which, I'm not the world's best bocce ball player, I guess, especially when it comes to cans of Miller Lite. But you know, that was a blast. Then we had a green sack race, the relay race.
Yeah,
and our team won by 1 second there. And then it was time for beer trivia, and I'm proud to say that I was able to pull it out of a tie the last minute with a 2-point. Well, actually, we were 1 point behind. It was a 2-point question.
Uh-huh.
What is the number of microbreweries, or actually, what is the number of breweries in the United States as of December 2009? And
The answer?
I pulled it in. I said 1,500, and the actual answer was 1,537 or something like that. And so we won by 1 point.
Wow.
And much, much rejoicing was had and clinking of tankards and such.
Wow. Boy, it was fun. Bringing it strong there, huh?
Yeah.
It's a good thing I wasn't there. I would have embarrassed us all.
Nah.
Would have been totally wrong. I said, no, Palmer, it's not 1500. Come on, it's more like 3500. You got your head up your ass. And then we would have said 3500 and would have lost. So
a couple of people did. They one group said like 900, and then somebody else said 3000. But yeah, and it was a great time there.
Oh, San Antonio is a beautiful city. I've been there once, and it sounds like a great group of people with a great event. So I would love to have been there. Yeah. Hopefully, if they can schedule it where it doesn't interfere with either of my daughter's birthdays, I can miss like my wedding anniversary. I can miss my birthday, yeah. My wife's birthday. I just can't miss my kids' birthdays. That's just something I won't miss. So. If it doesn't in conflict with either of those April or September, then I'm there. So sign me up if possible. I'd love to be there. And you got any other trips coming up?
No, not.
You're going to be at an NHC as well.
I'll be at NHC, and I'm going to be on Sunday after NHC. Mm-hmm. I'm taking a plane quickly down to Milwaukee, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do a book signing at the Northern Brewer location in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's a beautiful store out there.
Yeah, looking forward to stopping in there and seeing mm-hmm. people.
Bunch of great people out there, and some nice beer out there. I was very impressed with the homebrew beer as well out there in Milwaukee. So hopefully you homebrewers, bring John your good stuff like you did when Justin and I were out there. We both really loved the beer. We were very impressed. So we even did a tasting during one of the shows, and I think we didn't really have anything negative to say. I mean, we're like finding, comments for improvements, but really they were all very good right out of the gate. So
yeah. When I judged last weekend at Alamo City, I mean, I don't remember one bad beer. A lot of good beers. And then later in the afternoon, I helped judge Best of Show, mm-hmm. and a lot of great beers, for the Best of Show round.
Yeah.
But man, doing 20 beers for Best of Show is tough, especially after just finishing up a pub crawl.
Yeah. All right. Well, I suppose we should get back to work. We got our packaging show, which is will be part two of the package gasm, and we had left off just after capping bottles. So why don't we do this? Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get right into the gasm. Back after this.
Smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong. From the stovetop to a camp burner to some kind of brew stand. Most homebrewers follow some version of this progression. With each move, a homebrewer will often have to change a lot, if not all, of their equipment. Until now, Blickman Engineering brings you the Top Tier Brewing Stand. The only brewing stand that grows with you. For example, buy a top tier floor standing burner now, and it'll bolt right to your top tier brewing stand when you're ready for all grain brewing. The Top Tier Brewing Stand is perfect for 5-gallon to 20-gallon batch sizes. Its modular design is adjustable and accommodates everything from small footprint coolers up to 30-gallon pots. How does the top-tier brewing stand do it? At its core is a strong, heat-treated, and anodized aluminum main post. On all four sides are built-in T-slots for the adjustable heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves and beefy burner tiers. The tiers accommodate any manufacturer's pots or coolers up to 21 inches in diameter. Best of all, not only does the top-tier brewing stand grow with your skills and equipment, but it easily knocks down for long-term storage or transport, too. The top-tier brewing stand from Blickman Engineering. Learn more at BlickmanEngineering.com and to find a local Blickman retailer. And start brewing from the top tier.
Calling all homebrewers. Entries for the Samuel Adams Longshot American Homebrew Contest are due May 17th through May 28th. There's still time to get your beers entered. This year, the Homebrew Contest is all about Category 23, specialty beers. So start being creative and brew up a beer that doesn't fit into any of the traditional BJCP style categories. Let your creative juices flow and enter your Category 23 homebrew. Here's your chance to have your beer brewed, packaged, and nationally distributed in the 2011 Longshot Package. And four finalists will be awarded a trip to the 2010 Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado, where Samuel Adams will announce the winners. Visit SamuelAdams.com for all the details. Get your bottles in by May 28th. And as always, the entry fee is free. The Samuel Adams Longshot American Homebrew Contest. This year's Longshot could be all yours.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted best night spot 7 times and best brew pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Catherine the Great Imperial Stout, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and happy hour all day Mondays. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
And now, Northern Brewer brings you another installment of The Time Brewers! Three brewers, three different eras, all caught in the same fermento chronological vortex, traveling through time, righting brewing wrongs, and bringing beery wisdom to where and whenever it may be needed. Journey now with Dr. Jean de Klerk.
Greetings, listeners.
20th century Belgian super brewing scientist.
Please, the yeast and the enzymes do the hard work. I am merely a facilitator.
Icebox.
What?
21st century Norwegian-American homebrewer rapper from St. Paul.
Listen, I bust attenuation maxims and my Yakima magnums make my lager so smooth it's like a laxative. My spit got that static power after I mash for an hour. I got naked ladies in my brew room all covered in hot flowers. I swing a propagation flask like a 5-liter dick. Get your nasty mid-drinking group on ass back to 1026, boo!
And Brother Abelard.
Off thou a witch. Begone!
12th century English monk and perpetuator of brewing superstition.
My holy rod of divine bobbling shall maketh any ale to froth by the grace of heaven. And a modicum of bog myrtle hurts not either.
Brought to you by Northern Brewer, your one-stop homebrew supplier throughout the entire fermento chronosphere. The widest selection of quality malt, hops, yeast, and equipment with $7.99 flat rate shipping. Tune in next time for more
Time Brewers!
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by 2.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer
into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, Rick, we're talking packagegasm. And,
beer.
yeah, we turn beer into beer. Speaking of which, I went through the last show that we did on packaging, and I had a couple of comments, believe it or not. Most of the stuff, I agree with everything we said, and we covered things in a fair amount of detail. I was surprised every time I thought, we should mention this. We ended up mentioning it, so I thought that was pretty good. One thing that I think I've come to realize is that I think here on Brew Strong and on all the, and the shows that we do in Canyon Brew and all that, that we have an assumption that people are, you know, they've listened to us rant and rave about yeast health for the past 4.5 years.
That's and been that long.
Yeah. And, you know, so now everybody's taking, you know, high quality, you know, cultures, and they're, you know, making starters, and they're ensuring perfect yeast health, and, you know, pitching the right amount. And so when we say, yeah, don't do secondary, you know, it's 100% accurate. Well, you know, I'm still getting email from people saying, all right, so I sprinkled my dry yeast on top of the wort, and I'm like, no. So I think maybe, you know, part of the reason why people went with
secondary
was they were using dry yeast, and they were sprinkling on the surface. And when you do that, you know, half of that yeast dies immediately. So, you know, if you've added 10 grams of yeast to your beer, 5 grams of dead yeast from day one is laying on the bottom. And after a week, that dead yeast, you know, the lysis of the yeast is going to occur, and, you know, they'll start breaking down, and you end up with problems. So if that's how you're pitching your yeast and making your beers, then, yeah, you probably do want to do secondary, because you got a bunch of dead crud on the bottom. And you probably could get some off flavors from that. So, yeah, that would
rehydrating dry yeast is easy to do. Just get some, right. Take some cooled boiled water, and it's important that it's boiled. Pour it, in, you know, once it's cooled down to like 70 to 100 degrees, you know, just warm, barely warm to the touch. Pour into a Ziploc baggie, and then pour your dry yeast in there. Get most of the air out.
Uh-huh.
Squeeze it around. And you can let that sit, and it'll rehydrate. You know, you can shake the bag to keep it, you know, or to help it rehydrate and mix up.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing that, you know, you keep the oxygen exposure away for until you're ready to pitch to your wort, and that keeps mm-hmm. triolose and glycogen reserves intact. So
I'd be remiss, and people would expect me to say, you're suggesting you squeeze your bag and shake it around.
That's right.
Get it ready. Okay. All right. Yeah. So that was the one good point that I think we needed to make about secondary and yeast. And the other thing that we were talking about was capping. Capping beer bottles. And one question somebody had during the live Q&A, or during the chat at the end, was the oxygen permeability of wax. And you were going to look up oxygen permeability of various waxes and kind of give us a rundown of whether you thought how much that would help or not.
Yeah, there's not a lot of information on it out there on the web on it, about it, but what I did find out was that the waxes that are used for sealing bottles, Canuba wax and so on, beeswax, they have about twice or half the oxygen permeability of high density polyethylene plastic. So it's mm-hmm. you know, and that is, you know, that's your bucket. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
your average like,
yeah, brewing bucket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is pretty leaky of O2.
Yeah. And it's about a tenth as permeable as some other oxygen barrier plastics,
mm-hmm.
or excuse me, 10 times more permeable than some other plastics out there, you know, oxygen barrier plastics.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it does help, you know, especially what you're doing when you dip the top of the bottle in wax is you're kind of providing an extra seal around the edge of the gasket, you know, contact to the bottle. But you know, it's not perfect. I think you'd have to, you'd maybe have to dip it like, 5-10 times, make a candle out of that puppy before you, you know.
Well, all right. So I think we can say a couple of things for sure. One is that, it certainly doesn't hurt. It's right. going to add some additional protection, especially if you got a leaky cap, you know, if your capping isn't very good. And the other is that the thicker the wax, the more protection it's going to offer. There are some waxes that offer more oxygen protection. I guess what the microcrystalline waxes will offer more than the natural
waxes. And you can get those
waxes.
At the wine shop, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably the best wax to use. And like you're saying, make a big-ass candle out of it. Maybe put a wick in it.
Yeah,
and then you can light the bottle and burn it every once in a while, and then when it finally melts away, it's time to open it.
That would make a cool birthday present, wouldn't it?
Yeah, there you go, a bottle of mead or something, and as a candle,
yeah,
that'd be pretty cool. Watch somebody kill themselves with this thing. Now we'll be in trouble. But
yeah,
right. One of the problems that I think comes with these various caps and capping these bottles. I believe Sierra Nevada, they used to use a twist-off cap, and
right.
They discovered that the twist-offs allowed more oxygen to leak through into the beer than the regular crown caps without the twist-off. So they switched to those, which is say anything you want about Sierra Nevada. I tell you one thing I know for sure: they are so much about the beer and beer quality that it's almost nothing else matters to them.
That's right.
So, being good stewards of beardom and the environment and things like that matter to them as well. But they're good people, and they're totally about the beer. So, the cap and how well you cap it and crimp it and things like that definitely matter. Somebody posted in the forum something about the Emily capper and the cheap wings on the capper and stuff. That's true. I think they wear out and get loose and things like that, and the type of bottle, and there's such a variety of bottles and things that definitely will make a big difference in how well you're capping something. But like we suggested in the last show, you take that bottle, once you've capped it, keep the gas part up at the top of the bottle, give it a little shake, and then put it under some liquid in a bucket, let it sit there, and if you see bubbles slowly start to rise out of it, then it's definitely
seal.
A poor seal. Well, and it has to be carbonated, so
that's true.
If it's totally flat, then it's not going to work. But when you're counter pressure filling, which we'll get to in coming up, then that's a good way. That's how I check every so often to see how the seal is doing. But you can, if you're finding that you've done your priming sugar, you bottled the beer, you capped it, you set it out to in a warm space to carbonate, and then you find some bottles are carbonated and some aren't. That's a common problem. Could be that you got poor capping on some of the bottles. All right, and that's the next series of questions I got for you, John. Now we've got the beer in the bottles. How long is that going to take to carbonate? Where should we put it? Should we put it in the fridge? Should we put it in the stove?
Well,
direct sunlight?
Yeah. Room temperature, probably 80 degrees even for carbonating is good, because that's going to kick up the activity of the yeast that's in the bottle. Mm-hmm. They will go to town on that priming sugar and carbonate it. So for the first week or two after you've primed and capped it, I would say leave it at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll get the carbonation done. Once it's carbonated, now you want to think about long-term storage and long-term flavor stability. Now it's time to cool the beer down,
mm-hmm.
And store it cool or store it cold. For best flavor stability.
Mm-hmm. Now, quick question for you. The warmer you store the beer for, or set the warmer the place you put the beer for the carbonation phase, does that make it carbonate faster?
Yeah, there's a trade-off. I mean, if you got that beer up to,
100 degrees,
10, yeah. I think you're going to really accelerate the staling or any mm-hmm. potential staling that could happen mm-hmm. to it.
Right.
So, 60 to 70, maybe up to 80 mm-hmm. is good for carbonating,
mm-hmm.
But you don't want to go hotter.
Right. If you go too cold, take a long time to carbonate, or it can even fail to carbonate, right? If you go too cold.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, cap and then just immediately send it, you know, put it in the cellar or something, or stick it in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And it can, if the temperature's down, you know, below 60 for nail yeast, it may take months to carbonate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and now what about, let's say you got a couple of cases of bottles, you stack them up, put them in boxes, stack them up, you put them somewhere, and, you know, they're sitting on the concrete floor or something and in the garage, and that tends to be cold. And but, you know, the air around it, you say, oh, well, that's, you know, 70 degrees, should be fine. And you find that the bottles on top have carbonated and the bottles on the bottom case in the middle didn't carbonate very well. I mean, what's happening there?
Yeah, well, you know, down in contact with the concrete floor, maybe its temperature is actually around 50.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Depends on what part of your country you're in. Where I am down here, you know,
concrete's 100.
Yeah, it could be much warmer on the floor than it is up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But So main, you know, when you're carbonating the beer, the, you know, primed and bottled beer, pay attention to temperature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially I know big breweries. You know, they'll load all the stuff onto a pallet and, park pallet on top of pallet and stuff like this. And then, you know, the inner core of that pallet can have a different temperature than, you know, the bottles on the outside if they don't hold a good circulation and steady temperatures and things like that. That could be a factor as well. And you can end up with uneven carbonation. And one of the things that commercial brewers want to do is have, you know, the same carbonation in every beer, you know, and
right.
It's not nearly as important, I guess, in home brewing, but I know everybody wants to brew the perfect beer, so that's a big deal.
Now, Jamil, I mean, you may know this better than I. How many professional breweries are bottle conditioning their beers these days? Is it just the Belgians, or do we have some here in the States?
Well, you know, Sierra Nevada is a big one, and you know, there's more and more, I think, are looking at natural carbonation or, you know, bottle conditioning their beers. And they believe that it offers additional protection and for the beer, so you get the best beer possible to the consumer. And it is, you know, more expense. And, you know, as far as, you know, it takes more effort to properly bottle condition. So I don't know that everybody's doing it, but, I think more and more are. I'm not sure what the numbers would be. Maybe the Brewers Association would know. But my sense is that, a number of breweries are, you know, at least interested in, or they'll do it for certain beers at least, where okay. They feel like, it's of a benefit to them. But, yeah, Sierra Nevada, they do them all that way, which is impressive. They do a really good job of it, too. You know, you get that really fine dusting of yeast across the bottom of the bottle. You don't
right.
get big chunks, you know. I see breweries still that there's a big old slug of yeast in the bottom, like a quarter inch thick. It's like, a little too much yeast. A little too much yeast. But, Sierra Nevada. Let's see. All right, so, again, you're saying that it takes generally a couple of weeks to carbonate?
Yeah, 1 to 3 weeks, depending on how much, what your yeast level was, you know, how healthy that yeast was going into the bottle,
uh-huh.
you know, stuff like that. If you had had the beer in the fermenter for a month or two, and then primed and bottled and didn't add any additional yeast, it's probably going to take 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah. Less yeast will be there.
How long do you have to wait before you can drink those beers?
As soon as it's carbonated, I mean, mm-hmm. check. Usually the yeast that's in there will settle out, you know, pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Just check the bottom of the bottle. Check when you pour it. Check your clarity. Check the, as you open it. And
mm-hmm. And if you have some bottles that failed to carbonate, let's say all of them have failed to carbonate. I've opened, it's been a couple of weeks, 3 weeks at room temperature. I put two or three of them in the fridge. I open them and there's no, maybe there's a few, it seems like a little bit of bubbly in the beer, but really not fully carbonated. What should I do?
Well, you could make up a quick, pseudo yeast starter and put a few drops of yeast, get that yeast rehydrated. Get the yeast active.
Mm-hmm.
And then, squirt a cc of yeast into each bottle and recap them.
Mm-hmm. Now, if the beer has a bit of carbonation to it already, considerable amount of carbonation, it's just it's carbonated but not enough to your desire, you can't really do that because they'll gush all over the place when you add the yeast, won't they?
Well,
let's say it's carbonated to 2 volumes. I expected 3.
Then
it becomes kind of dangerous.
I guess it's going to foam.
Yeah.
You may be able to do it quickly, drip some in and recap it, but I don't know that that's worth doing if you're trying to go from 2 to 3. Send it into competition and take the hit on carbonation level. I don't know, what would you do? I mean, if you're trying to send it to competition, maybe it's worth it trying to go from 2 to 3. But for just
me,
drinking?
I just throw it away. Start over.
Ah.
That's always my solution.
Can always make more.
Right. I think I'd just send it in as is. I wouldn't even bother. I'd just it's fine. The judges won't know.
Yeah.
they'll be clueless anyways. That's fine.
To be honest, when I'm kegging my beer, I always carbonate it, and I really have no real target of carbonation in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll set up the keg to maybe 15 psi, 20 psi. And as long as I get some foam on top and a little bit of carbonation, on the palate, it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to target carbonation per style.
So what if you're getting a couple bottles that don't carbonate? So I put 2 or 3 in the fridge and one's not carbonated at all and the other 2 seem fine. What might be going on there?
Well, it depends. Look at how you added the priming sugar. Did you add it in in a bottling
bucket?
Uh-huh. Yeah, really mix it well.
Mm-hmm.
Or did you try to use a teaspoon per bottle kind of thing, or carbonation tab or pellet?
Right. Maybe you forgot to add the sugar to one of the bottles if you did it that way. And if you did it in the bucket, you didn't mix it. All right. Yeah. Bad caps.
Yeah, bad capping, bad caps. Could be a number of possible.
Yeah, and that, there's, if you're buying caps, like discount caps, sometimes I think there's, runs of caps that are for some reason not the best caps in the world, but they don't throw them away. They end up just selling them, by the truckload to somebody else. And, sometimes I think those end up in homebrew shops. They don't tell the homebrew shops there's anything funky with them. And, they're made of a weird, super stiff material or, there's, something off on the sizing or, where they're sort of okay but not perfect. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that could be a
case. Look at your capper, too. We were talking last week about, is the cup wearing out, the metal cup that actually makes the crimp?
Right.
Is that getting worn out?
Yeah.
Look, you should see the edges of the crown cap kind of wrapping around the lip of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And get a really good crimp on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I wore out, one of the bells on those Emily cappers. Now we've bottled and capped, over 8,000 beers. So that pretty much wore out at about, 4,000, 5,000. The little crown is just way too loose and was not providing a full crimp. It's still okay, but you could actually visually see the difference between that and bought another Emily Cabber, and you could see how it was really pulling those little side pieces down further. It was much tighter cap.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those things, they kind of flare out over time. You do it, use them enough, they eventually wear out. So if and in that case, you know, they were all consistently a little loose. So, and, you know, there's variations in the bottle and all that stuff. That can all make a difference. And if you're trying to reuse, like, twist-off bottles and things like that, I think that also can cause, you know, look at the differences in bottles, maybe, if you're getting different carbonation levels or, you know, if you're, that can be one issue as
well. Headspace, too, can be a factor.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that the, you know, if you prime all the bottles the same way, and some are a little, you know, it shouldn't matter if some are a little more full than others.
Right.
But oddly enough, the carbonation is generated by the yeast, comes up through the beer and fills the headspace, and it's almost that the factor of the headspace pressure. In establishing that equilibrium helps determine the amount of carbonation in that beer, oddly mm-hmm. enough.
Hmm.
So, you know, don't over, you know, I always used to say, well, it doesn't matter how high you fill it, just, you know, fill it all the way to the top if you want. But
mm-hmm.
The beer will carbonate better if you give it, you know, half an inch to 3/4 of an inch of headspace.
Mm-hmm. At least some headspace then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even up to an inch.
Cool.
So that's one other thing. If you're noticing uneven carbonation,
right.
Check, make sure you've got uniform fill levels.
Give it an inch if you can.
All yeah. Right.
That's my new motto, along with snap yourself off a nice fresh piece.
That's true.
Okay, let's take a short break, and we'll come back. Let's get into kegging. We'll be back after this.
Your carboy cap on.
This is Brew Strong.
We'll be right back.
Do you support the Brewing Network? Do you brew your own? Are you looking for an economical, fun, and legal way to do both? Subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine and do just that. All year long, Brew Your Own will surprise you, entertain you, and educate you with articles on beer and brewing from authors like the Brewing Network's very own Jamel Zalishev and John Palmer. Each issue is a full pint of brewing techniques, homebrew stories, tips and photos, projects to make yourself, and recipes for the avid home brewer. Get your tough questions answered by Mr. Wizard. And polish your style accuracy with DeVille. A portion of every subscription goes to the Brewing Network, so subscribe today at byo.com/brewingnetwork or just click the BYO logo on the Brewing Network homepage and support a fantastic hobby and your favorite broadcaster. Brew Your Own, the how-to homebrew beer magazine.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily, even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
What's up, BNARMY? Jake and Mike here from Brewing TV.
Brewing TV is homebrew culture in video. Asking the big questions, who and why. We leave the how to the tubby know-it-alls.
Check us out at brewingtv.com.
The first webisode drops May 7th.
Like Crosley's pants in a Louisiana jail cell.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Fenn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
Wine guys. What's wrong with wine guys? Nothing. Oh, come on. Let's see here. But they're not beer guys.
Beer.
All right. Okay, so I think we covered the bottling aspect of packaging pretty good.
If there's anything we missed, you know, send in an email to the chat.
Yeah. I was thinking, maybe we should have covered labels, but nah.
Mm.
All right, kegs. So, all right, if you're kegging, like we mentioned earlier, it's easier than bottles because you only clean one vessel for a batch of beer versus 48 vessels for a batch of beer, right? Or 50 even. Yeah. So, one of the most important things, I think, is cleaning the kegs. Some people, they'll run a beer through it, and then all they do is kind of like rinse it out, and then they put another beer in there. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's okay. But for me, I completely disassemble it. I take when I mean completely disassemble, I don't take apart the pressure relief valve and things like that off of the lid. But I do remove the lid. I remove the gasket from the lid.
Right.
I remove both of the in and out posts off the keg. I remove the O-rings off the keg. I take the little poppets out of the middles of the posts. And then I take the dip tubes out, the long one, the short one, and the O-rings off of that. And then all those go into a bucket of warm PBW, get scrubbed, they soak for a good half hour. And the keg itself, I've removed all those pieces of parts. I give it a good rinse. And I fill it up with warm PBW in the manufacturer's concentration, which is like a 2 ounce scoop or 2 ounces by weight, same thing, into 5 gallons of water. Fill it up to the top, and then I let that sit for a half an hour. And then I pour that into the next keg. I'll use that, for a good 3-4 kegs, as long as the kegs are fairly clean. And then, and also I do some scrubbing in between there. And I take a non-abrasive Scotch 3M pad and use that underneath the opening of the lid. Scrub around there, scrub around where the posts were, scrub the tops and around that area, and dump that out. And then when you go to rinse it, if you've used hot water with your PBW, you've got to use hot water when you rinse. If you use cold water, following hot water, all the calcium in the water is going to come out and form a scale, and it's impossible to get off. Once you get scale inside there, not impossible, but it's very difficult.
It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, so you just want to rinse with hot water a couple times, really thorough rinsing. Then I fill it up with, once I've sure I got all the PBW out of it, I fill up with cool water and star sand. And I use the manufacturer's recommendation on star sand.
You know what I do?
Uh-huh.
When at that point, because the star sand foam mm-hmm. sanitizes as well as the liquid, mm-hmm. I only put in about a couple quarts of star sand mm-hmm. Solution. And then I seal up the keg and shake it all around. Yeah, get you know, kind of foam it to sanitize it.
Uh-huh. That'll work. I fill it all the way to the top and to where the foam comes out and it looks like Don King's hair.
Ah,
and then it kind of falls over and covers the screw threads of the where the posts go on, and get that entire top covered. And I let that sit for 10-15 minutes. Although mm-hmm. Contact time needs to only be two, I think.
Right.
And then once that's done, I transfer that to the next keg. I leave one keg sitting on top of the other upside down. Let it drip a bit. I get out all my pieces, parts. I put all those, they're in a bucket of star sand. I put those in. And actually, I put most of the pieces, parts on before I invert it. I put the dip tubes in, all that stuff, and the posts on. And then I invert it and drain that thing out. And then I put the lid in, last thing. So there's a little bit of star sand left in that, which I can dump before I put my beer in there. One of the things about the posts and all, the thing that drives me nuts is homebrew shops providing these those black rubber neoprene O-rings for the posts and for the dip tubes. And really what you need is, they're made, they used to call them quad rings, but they call them double seal, I think. O-rings. Those are the appropriate ones for the posts. And, with those, you can actually, screw the post down finger tight and you get a perfect seal. It will not.
And how do they differ? Those differ from the regular O-ring?
They've got a square body to them and, a sealing surface up at the top edge and a sealing surface at the bottom edge. And, they make a perfect seal on these things. And that's what was designed for these, and that's the original piece supplied on these. And they weren't just the regular round O-rings. And, what I find is, people use those regular O-rings, and they're cranking down on those posts with a wrench trying to get them to seal because they end up leaking. And, those are stainless threads. You're galling the threads. You're just destroying those stainless threads by doing that. And, they're just going to get looser and looser and looser. And, eventually your keg's going to be no good. If you use the right seal and, the right amount of, force to torque these things down, that keg will last forever. It's cheap to buy these things. I mean, they don't cost that much. And, again, I've finger-tightened the posts down and forgotten to snug them a little bit with a wrench, and they seal perfectly. And later on I'm able to remove them finger tight.
And these types of seals are available?
I bought mine by the baggie from McMaster Carr. I think some homebrew shops are selling them. If you can get them through your homebrew shop, encourage your homebrew shop to get them. I've posted on some forums before, several forums, and I think people have carried that information forward to other forums about the sizes and materials. The other thing is on the post, that's a silicone O-ring that they use on those, I believe. And, if you use those, one, they go on and off easier, and the connectors go on and off easier, and they make a nice, perfect seal. And if you respect your seals like that, you'll get you won't have any problems with leakage. And that's one of the things about, when you're kegging, if your CO2 is leaking back out, you're going to have a hard time getting proper carbonation, and you'll blow through a cylinder of CO2 awfully fast. So, you know, any leaks, you don't want any leaks. And that's the most common leakage area. So, all right. So that's how I clean my kegs and sanitize. And then, you know, I guess you use the auto siphon. Me, I use a piece of vinyl tubing when we're racking to the keg. What tips do you have for people, John, getting the beer into the keg? Do I need to be really careful? What do I need to look out for? What should I focus on?
Well, anytime you're filling a keg or a bottling bucket or anything like that, you know, when you're exposing the beer to air, you know, get the end of the hose underneath the surface as quick as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lift up the keg if the hose is too short. Seems to be a common problem for me, maybe not you, but yeah. You know, get the end of the hose.
I've infected you.
Yeah. Oh, I was, you know, while you were talking a minute ago, all I could think about was the penguin and ice cream joke. So,
ice cream.
But, you know, get the hose underneath the level of the liquid and reduce the turbulence so that you're not really exposing the beer to the air. It helps to purge the keg with CO2. You know, if you got your CO2 hooked up, what I do is I'll quickly hook up the CO2 to the liquid side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it blows the CO2 down to the bottom of the keg and kind of pushes the air out that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of purge the keg, put the lid in halfway.
Talking about hooking it up to the liquid side, it's don't completely connect it to the liquid side because it'll often get stuck.
Yeah,
right? So just kind of if you're doing a ball lock, hold the ball detents up and just kind of
press it there.
Press it there
and
let the gas flow and then pull it off. If you completely connect it, it's going to lock on there with those ball locks.
Yeah. Same with the pin lock. There, you've actually got to switch the fitting so you can do that. But because the gas side is 2 pins and the liquid side is 3 pins.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can slip it over and just kind of purge the keg for a minute or two, kind of get some air exchange, and then take it off and then start filling.
Mm-hmm.
I use the auto siphon. Larger is better. They auto siphon or other racking canes, you can get them in like a, you know, 3/8 inch or a 1/2 inch.
Mm-hmm.
The 1/2 inch, you know, fills faster.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can reduce the time, the air contact time of your beer by, you know, filling a little faster that way.
Well, one thing I like to do is with the keg lid, I put the keg lid in there, and then I just kind of set it askew a little bit, so that the hose is passing through that gap and filling and preventing any dust. Now, Chris Graham at More Beer, he was all about, you know, they work in a real dusty environment there, and there's grain and, you know, milling going on 24/7.
JP.
And they've got JP. And so, you know, he was all about figuring out a way to transfer beer with no exposure to the air. So they were doing all closed transfers, and they figured out ways to go in through the beer outside, and you know, they'd set up a carboy cap and very gently pressurize the carboy to, you know, drive the beer over through the lines into the keg, and you know, he would have a completely closed transfer. I think that's ideal. Me, I'm just so darn lazy that I never really got into it, but I think that, you know, if you're having any questions as to your ability to keep dust and stuff like the contaminants out of your beer during transfers, which is a very common time to you know, contaminate your beer, I'd look into that kind of closed transfer, and I think that would be a good thing to do.
Well, you can also take a lazy man's approach and just throw a sheet of clean newspaper over the top while you're transferring. You know, dust falls down.
Right.
So if you kind of, I usually use saran wrap, but, you know, put some plastic wrap around the top of the keg as you're racking, keep the dust out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to prevent contamination.
And the wrap is nice because you can see through it. And, you know, I always, I want to see when the beer is getting close to the top of the keg because you don't want it overflowing and making a mess. Ideally, you want to stop it before it reaches that gas in dip tube.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but it's not critical if you do one way or another. But, you know, you're supposed to stop it before that. And then, you know, seal it up. You know, once you've sealed it, transferred your beer, once you, seal the keg, you know, don't shake it around because there's oxygen in the top, although some CO2 has come out. But you want to hook up the gas to it. And then, if you're getting... Purge the headspace. If you're getting difficulty getting a seal on that keg lid, you can spray some sanitizer on the top, see if you see any bubbles. What I've done a couple times is, when it doesn't seem to seal right, you can either kind of readjust it, but they tend to, fall in place. You can rotate it around so it's facing the other direction. Sometimes that helps. But the other thing is, how those bailing levers on the lids to hold it shut. If you pull that to where it's standing straight up and down, it actually puts a little more force on that lid and pulls it shut a little bit better. You can also lift up on that if you want. And, you put CO2 in then, and that tends to make it seal. And once it's sealed and you got good pressure in there, it'll hold the seal. It won't, loosen up again. But sometimes it takes a little extra force up on the lid to get a good seal on the keg.
Yeah. A lot of my pinlock kegs don't have a pressure release valve in the lid.
Mm-hmm.
So I, will hook up the gas and gap the lid a little bit and, vent the headspace that way. Turn on the gas real low, mm-hmm. just, like 5 PSI or something, just to help purge out that headspace before I seal it up. But if you've got a lid that has a relief valve in the lid, then you can do that after the fact. Just open that and vent it for a minute or two,
mm-hmm.
vent that headspace, and that does a lot to help keep oxygen out and help your long term storage.
Right. Well, and we did a show on the perfect pour. You can go back through the Brew Strong archives at thebrewingnetwork.com, and you can see those all the archive shows, and you can find that one. And we talk at more length about kegging and carbonation and all that. But one thing I wanted to mention, I think we need to cover here, is if I want to naturally carbonate or bottle keg condition my beer. How do I calculate out the sugar needs for that? Is it, it's the exact same thing as you do for bottles, or is it slightly different?
It all scales linearly. So if you're looking at a priming chart for, 5 gallons of beer,
mm-hmm.
That translates right up to five gallons
of beer.
Yeah.
All right.
Same.
Okay. You can just put that in the bottom and run your beer in, and off you go for some fresh yeast, if needed.
If needed, yeah.
Okay. What about getting it to carbonate and getting the lid to seal and all that?
You'll probably want to put a little bit of like say 5 pounds in the headspace to. Get that lid to seal,
right?
Initially, and you're going to want to shake the keg up to distribute that sugar a bit.
Mm-hmm.
After you've filled the keg and closed it,
right?
But that if you leave that like we said, 60 to 80 degrees,
mm-hmm.
and let that should naturally carbonate and pressurize,
right?
And
if you don't check to make sure your keg has no leaks, when you go to do a natural carbonation, you're going to end up, it won't carbonate at all. It's all going to leak out, won't it?
Right. Yeah, so you're going to want a little bit of gas in the headspace to keep that lid, tightly sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And as you shake it around, you should not see beer, you know, or bubbles leaking out of any of your fittings.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that's kind of a given.
Okay.
But
now, what about if you're hooking this up to carbonate, and then some people like to shake the daylights out of it to speed up carbonation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good, bad, indifferent?
Well, it definitely helps speed up the carbonation. You know, you can if you leave like 2 or 3 inches of headspace in that keg and crank up the pressure to like 30, 40 psi and rock it. You know, you and just I wouldn't you know, take the thing in both arms and shake it back and forth. If you just, you know, hook up the gas and rock the keg back and forth, get some agitation going,
mm-hmm.
you can hear the gas going in, you know, through the regulator.
Mm-hmm.
It'll pressurize, it'll fill up, and again, you know, you'll hear the regulator kind of taper off.
Mm-hmm.
Let it sit for an hour, two, and then come back and rock it again, and you'll hear it, you know, you'll hear it pressurizing more.
Mm-hmm.
If you shake it too much, I don't know what percentage and how much of a real problem this is, but you will be, you know, degrading some of your foam proteins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, foam only once. They,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you overdid it, you know, too much, then you could, you know, take a lot of your head stability out of the beer.
Right, those proteins actually denature when they form the bubbles.
Yeah, I doubt you're going to have a horrible problem with that.
Yeah,
you know, just
right.
trying to keg your beer, but still, something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, I'm again lazy. I just hook it up to gas and leave it. And
yeah,
I'll come exactly. back in a week. And you know, the other advantage is, you know, there's a lot of particulate matter in a green beer, and you let it, you know, just let the beer sit, you know, steady and cold for a week, and you know, that stuff tends to fall out, and it really improves head retention and beer flavor
right.
and things like that. So I wouldn't be that eager to get it drinking right away unless you're out of beer, I guess. Okay. Is there anything else that we should cover on this before we go on to the next show, which is going to all be about counter pressure filling?
Well, what about the little air stones that you can put on the gas side?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure.
Of a keg. Do you use those?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm sure it helps, you know, carbonate faster maybe. But again, you know, like you're saying, if you crank it up to 30, 40 PSI and just wiggle the keg, or even just tap the top of the keg to disturb the surface, you know, you can carbonate that thing in within a couple hours.
Yeah.
You know, it'll carbonate pretty fast, depending on what level of carbonation you want. And then, you know, some people, yeah, they put it on the side and they roll it and all that stuff. I really wouldn't do that. But that's just me. You know, you don't want to get anything going up your gas lines and stuff like that.
That's true.
Yep. Okay. Well, if you think that's it, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we will get into questions from the chat, and then we'll wrap this part of our gasm. Back after this.
Brew right. Brew smart.
Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Cutting-edge equipment from Blickman Engineering is designed by brewers to make your brew day shorter, more enjoyable, and to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. like the Intuitive Beer Gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles, the Therminator Wort Chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day, the Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial, the Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry, and much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew Free or Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack cans.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
Mother...
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
Woohoo! It's getting warm in the studio. It's starting to put me to sleep. I'm sleepy. All right, so we're talking packaging and kegging and all that. Anything else to add, John, before we get on to the questions?
Well, I guess maybe we probably should see what the questions are, but I was thinking, should we touch on the regulators or, beer line or, the gas line splitting, kegerators kind of thing?
Didn't we cover that in the...
Perfect
Four? I don't know. Did we?
I don't remember.
Oh, well, folks, go back to that show and see if we covered it. If we didn't,
I guess one thing I can steer everybody to real quick is... Page 299, Appendix D in Brewing Classic Styles, has a pressure and volumes of CO2 chart in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this works for international listeners too. We've got temperatures in both F and C, and pressures in both PSI and kilopascals or KPA. And if you want to set up, say, 2.5 volumes of CO2 at 55 degrees or 13 C, then you need 20 PSI or 138 kilopascals to reach 2.5 volumes of CO2 in your keg. So it's a handy little table, and it's right there in Brewing Classic Styles.
All right. Justin, questions from the chat.
Yeah, one question that's come up during these shows a couple of times I want to make sure we get in is, how about Kreuznung?
Kreuznung, good question.
Yes.
Right, so what about Kreuznung? Now, isn't that where you take fermenting beer or, still active beer and add a little portion of that to the it and use that for carbonation?
I've never written about it myself. I don't know that you have either. But there are, if you look on the internet, there are articles and, probably Brew Your Own or Zymergy.
Right. Well, and what's his name? Kai, Brew Kaiser. He has a good Kreuznung section on his website there.
Yeah.
And, go and check that out. I think it's brewkaiser.com or something like that.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm not sure. But, do a search on that. I thought he had a pretty good write-up on Kreuznung.
The benefit of Kreuznung is that you're introducing active yeast and fermentables into the beer that will, use up any oxygen that you've, got in the beer, trying to in racking from the keg to the or from the fermenter to the keg.
Mm-hmm.
You'll use up that oxygen, and the more active yeast will also reduce some of your the green beer character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to really achieve a more flavor stable batch.
Mm-hmm.
And add natural carbonation if that's what your aim is. I mean, really, historically, they didn't have forced carbonation capability.
Mm-hmm.
And the poisoning,
they couldn't add just sugar because that wasn't part of the beer for the Reinheitsgebot.
Right.
So
Kreuznung was the way they carbonated a keg.
Mm-hmm.
But we touched upon this show and last show in terms of, if your beer is sat for a month or so in the fermenter, and now you want to bottle condition that beer, add some active yeast.
Right.
We talked about adding a fresh yeast starter.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of fermentable with your prime and sugar, that's really Kreuznung there. It's maybe a little different method of doing it, but it still amounts to the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite a useful method. I think it's. I guess you do it even when you're bottling, put it in the bottling bucket and go that route. Yeah, yeah, and kegging so. Quite a useful way. I think the reason more people don't do it is they don't have like an active beer to pull some Kreuznung from, and it's a different beer. But I think we gave some ideas for doing it without it using sugar and your yeast and getting it active and then putting it in.
Right.
Maybe that's similar. And I think again on the Brew Kaiser site, he's got calculations for how much you need and things like that. It's a pretty good write up. All right. What's our next one?
So in packaging, how about, you guys talked about capping, Emily capping, using the Emily capper. What about corking?
Corking.
Yes. Yeah. Corking bottles. Just different aspects of that. We were talking about oxygen permeability.
Right.
So what are some of the aspects of corking?
Let's see. You gotta get the cork in the bottle. They have the natural corks. They got the synthetic corks. I think one of the things about corks that they want is oxygen permeability. I think.
Okay.
And in beer, generally you don't. I mean, I guess if you have a beer that you want some oxygen to seep in and affect it, then you would. Otherwise, you can stick with crown caps. There's corks that you can fully insert in the bottle and then cover with a crown cap.
Okay.
And kind of do both and then seal it in wax, make a wax candle out of it. And, that's probably the best of all worlds.
And then corking's most appropriate to your Belgian styles and some of your sour beers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where oxygen helps develop the flavor, especially if, some of these companies, they package with some Brett, and then you want a little bit of oxygen to get in there, a micro amount of oxygen. That can be helpful, to be corked as well.
So on a homebrew level, is the equipment more intensive than just capping?
No, it's similar. They have, the Emily Capper of corking.
Okay.
The red plastic, Italian made, I think it is. And, you have to squeeze the cork to get it into the bottle. And generally it's a little trickier than capping, if you ask me. Capping is super simple and easy and easy to get good results with every time. But corking can be tricky to get the full cork completely into the bottle unless you buy, one of those floor corkers. Those work really well. And then, your supply of corks, each supply of corks tends to be a little different, that can be tricky.
Is the cork
as well.
Wet when you put it in, or is it dry?
Yeah, it's wet. You tend to put the corks in a solution of sanitizer, that they use in winemaking, and then you put it in the corker, and then insert it in, and that helps to lube it up a little bit. But I don't know. Anything to add to that, John?
No, I've never corked a beer before myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And, the natural corks, they impart a little bit of flavor sometimes, especially if they're the corks that are corked, get that mold growing on them.
Yeah, synthetic corks probably don't have the micro-oxygen permeability that the natural corks do, I would think.
Well, they make some that have, that do the same amount of oxygen. On purpose, because the winemakers want some oxygen to get in.
Right.
The other thing about corking a beer is I have heard say that on wines you want to lay the bottle down, you want to keep the cork wet, et cetera, et cetera. And I've gotten plenty of bottles of beer that with corks in them that say specifically keep it, store it upright, and don't lay it down. So I'm not sure, because the one of the reasons you want to keep the cork wet is so it doesn't dry out and shrink, and then you end up with a lot of oxygen getting in.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure.
I've heard the same thing, and I've heard that the only explanation I've heard is that it has to do that because that cork, that bottle is under pressure, whereas wine is not.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how that relates to keeping the cork dry in a beer.
Right.
But that was the explanation that I was given.
Huh.
I've also never seen a synthetic cork in a beer, and I've had quite a lot of corked beers, but I don't know that I've ever seen one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I have either.
And I wonder if it's because most of the corked beers are from Belgium and Europe in general, and I wonder if synthetic isn't as popular over there as it is here with wine, because synthetic corks with wine are very popular in the States now.
Right, right.
I've had a lot of synthetic corks in Russian River, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Port, Russian River.
Okay. They must be sending you the cheap stuff.
Well, when you get the 750s,
yeah, okay,
larger. I mean, those have
I think Vinny's real in tune with the wine industry as well. So
yeah,
I'm sure he realizes synthetic is a good way to go, and he's willing to do it maybe.
Huh. All right, couple more questions from the chat. You talked about for carbonating in the bottle, kind of raising those temperatures, having them pretty warm. And the listener wants to know, will carbonating in the bottle at those higher temperatures add excessive ester flavors to the beer?
No, it won't. You do get a different character to the beer by bottle conditioning versus kegging. There's a subtle difference, but doing it warm versus doing it cooler, there's not enough sugar, not enough real, fermentation going on to change the character profoundly. It's going to be subtle.
Right.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Ester production is related to yeast growth. So if the yeast aren't growing, they're not producing any esters.
Okay.
So you get such little growth that you're really not going to produce any esters. They produce the compounds that become esters, the acids and the fusel alcohols, and later combine to become esters. So little is happening there. You can do it real warm and not really run into a problem.
Okay. And so that's why you've said to me that even in fermentation that I'm really only super concerned with my temperature in those first couple days when there's growth. And after that, the temp could raise a bit and it wouldn't.
Exactly. Yeah. It's when the yeast are growing that you need to worry about it. And then once the growth is done, then they reach that stationary phase. They're fermenting and it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you keep the yeast active. So you don't want the temperature to drop. You can go ahead and raise it, but don't let it drop. Just, keep it steady or rising and, your beer will be good. It's those first few days. That's why I don't like to pitch warm and then cool it down and go back up and things like that.
Okay. All right, and last question from the chat. You were talking about fill levels earlier, John Palmer. So what is considered appropriate? What's a low fill and what's a high fill?
A high fill is like a quarter inch from the top. A low fill is an inch and a half, of headspace.
Well, and, if you look at commercial beers, there's a certain standard. And if you actually, those 12-ounce bottles hold more than 12 ounces. And 12 ounces is, somewhere like halfway down the neck. Mm-hmm. And so, that's like the fill level at 12 ounces.
About an inch and a quarter, something like that is probably typical of commercial fill.
And if you want to know what, fill level is right, measure out exactly 12 ounces of water, fill the bottle, the 12-ounce bottle, see where that line is? That's 12 ounces. That's actually the appropriate fill level for commercial beers.
Easy enough. Okay. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't think of that. Good idea.
Yeah. And the commercial brewers tend to fill them a little higher than that.
Yeah.
Just because they don't want to, if you provide less than the product states, can't provide too much more because then they get in trouble too. So.
Right. Well, and us consumers are tough on that too. We don't want to perceive that we've been gypped.
Right. But if they start putting like 13 ounces in a bottle, then I'm sure they run into problems with the governing bodies, saying, oh, they're giving away, more beer than they're supposed to be giving away, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that was it from the chat room, guys.
All right. Great show. I think we learned quite a bit about packaging, and we're going to have yet another show in this Packagegasm.
Yep.
So if you stay tuned. Yeah. Go ahead, John.
We're going to talk about counter-pressure filling, right?
Exactly. I mean, now you get the beer in the keg. Big question, how do you get it into the bottle? We're going to do a whole show about transferring beer from keg, already carbonated, to the bottle and getting good results. We're going to talk about all the methods we can think about. We even got an expert that designed one of these methods, and he's going to join us. It's going to be a good show. I'm excited to do it. I've done a lot of counter-pressure filling over the years, so I got all my techniques lined up as well.
Cool.
If you get a chance, check out our fine sponsors, BlickmanEngineering.com. Check out the Brewing Network store, thebrewingnetwork.com. We've got Brew Strong shirts. We got hats. We got glassware. We got books. We got all sorts of good stuff there. Check out BYO, BYO.com, or click on the BYO logo there on the Brewing Network site. And that way, half that subscription price goes to the Brewing Network and helps us out quite a bit. Let's see. We got the NHC coming up. Get yourself out to Minneapolis. Come join us. We're going to have a party. We're going to have the Brewing Network anniversary party, fifth anniversary. We're going to all be there.
What night is it
going to
be?
We're going to do some live shows. It's going to be Wednesday, I believe.
Wednesday the 16th, and tickets are available in the store right now. Ooh. VIP tickets, even.
VIP tickets.
The Brewing Network store. I think there's only like 30 left or something.
Oh, yeah. You better get there. Get those tickets now. And like I always say, make sure you brew often and snap yourself off a nice fresh piece.
Brew strong, everybody.